Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Autosport Podcast.
The silver is back. Sort of. Mercedes have now launched their latest F1 contender, the W15. They've switched up the livery while looking back to previous designs, but all eyes are on the upcoming season. Clinching the second place from Ferrari at the last minute, can Mercedes return to the fight for first place? Well, I'm Bryn Lucas, and I'm delighted to have joining me this time Matt Q and Philip Clearan. Welcome, both.
Hi, Bryn. Yeah, I think it's one of the most anticipated launches of the 10 this year, isn't it? Because you've got Mercedes trying to sort of correct their ground effects rot, the narrative of Lewis Hamilton leaving, and how sort of obviously what we all want is a challenge for Red Bull. Mercedes, because they're coming from sort of a clean sheet paper design, it feels like they've got more capacity to close that gap as opposed to Ferrari, who've had quite a few key technical staff leave, and McLaren, who have sort of, into the winter, they're a bit more circumspect about their chances. And then they spoke sort of around Christmas time, the livery launch, and they seemed really upbeat. And then just before the Mercedes launch, we had the McLaren sort of drop and then a press release. And then they seemed a bit downbeat again. So with McLaren always sort of being honest under Andrea Stella, the team boss, you sort of wonder, are they dialing back expectations now? So again, you're looking at Mercedes as being the team that sort of can give us an exciting championship this year, hopefully.
Yeah, I think that humility is really important because they've just had two really poor years. So you're not going to have a lavish launch somewhere with all sorts of bells and whistles. It's just like, here's a car. We know we've got it wrong, not once, but twice. So let's try and, you know, focus on the important bits, try and get an all new car out, and, you know, the launch should be business as usual.
Well, let's forget about the technicalities for the moment and just focus purely on the aesthetics, the livery. And somehow Mercedes have gone back to previous years with the stars on the rear of the engine cover and the red Ineos stripes, but updated its front end to include both the iconic silver and black designs in one, with the silver nose transitioning with the usual Petronas green stripe. What do we both think of the design, Phil?
I actually quite like it. I mean, a lot of people wanted to see the black stay. A lot of people wanted to return to silver. And I guess they both have it in some degree. But I think it's something new. And in a way, it's sort of a throwback to the West McLaren era of the late 90s, early 2000s, with the silver running through the middle and then black around the sides. I don't mind that, actually. I think we've had some really pretty shocking livery so far. So this one is all right.
It puts me in mind of, and this is a bit of a clang, but when I covered a few seasons of Formula E, it's sort of very similar to that livery with the sort of silver nose, exposed carbon fibre, and then you had blue stripes on the Formula E car because electric and electricity means blue, and here you've got the sort of the turquoise of Petronas. But I think it's one of those that, you know, Phil and I are in a very privileged position to go and see these cars in person. And that's what you need to see, in a sense that when Mercedes returned to an all-black livery last year, that was slightly deceptive. We had some bits were painted black, but in close, it was all like swathes of exposed carbon fibre, sort of a proper sort of prototype finish. So, you know, we know that the carbon fibre is back for weight saving, or at least leaving it unpainted. So I want to go and see it in person, see, is that finished black or is it actually all naked? And this is their sort of, they've managed to creep under the weight limits. They can have a bit of silver. They can throw back, you know, conveniently to the 2020, 2021 liveries. But this is like the ideal halfway house. But yeah, it's obviously silver is not hugely bold and flamboyant. Obviously, it's Mercedes colour, but it's nice to have a splash of something on there.
Yeah, the silver arrows, though, when there's not a lot or not a huge amount of silver on there, that's just a bit of a bugbear for me, but I'm sure I'll get over it. Now, let's move on to the car itself. It seems to be a long way off the no pod design from the W14, incorporating the downwash side pods and the innet that we've seen in similar designs across the grid. But is there anything else that you've both noticed from the design of the W15?
So in a really like ham-fisted attempt to do a side-by-side comparison, I found a few images of W14 and tried to get them to scale on my computer screen, see if they match up. I suppose one of the things is with the wheelbase and the positioning of the cockpit, because we know from very early doors that was a thing Hamilton hated. He felt he was sat too far forward. So he got, you know, weight transfer, massive pendulum, and that contributed to the skittish end. So, you know, drawing a couple of lines on Microsoft Paint and other processing tools, it looks ever so slightly further back, but I need to see like a proper comparison. Our tech guys are working on that. The thing that I did notice most of all, though, oh, you got sort of a flatter nose and things, but the Mercedes W14 was really characteristic for like having really like hunched shoulders. So, you know, it sort of flowed from the halo towards the rear wing, sort of this sort of bulging surface. It looked almost like, you know, it was sort of wading in to fight, a bit tense, trying to sort of got its hackles up, looking a bit bigger. Now it sort of seems much more curvaceous and goes sort of much more, falls much more dramatically into the side pod. And, you know, I don't know about the packaging underneath, what that does for center of gravity, but it does look a bit more sort of settled and lower to the floor and more svelte because of that. But that's just sort of aesthetics and what we can see.
Yeah, well, the one thing they did mention is obviously, like you mentioned, Q, things like the cockpit positioning, that's all like inherent stuff that you can only really address with a new chassis. But if you look at one of the other main issues that Mercedes had last year, it was how skittish it was to drive the rear and instability. And it does look like they've gone to great lengths to address that. They've been very coy on what they've changed, but they have mentioned stuff like the gearbox casing. They've changed the shape of that. They've gone for an all-new chassis. So I think there's a lot of work gone in there. But obviously, about 80 to 90% of what you get to see is all designed to serve the floor and to improve how the floor works. So a lot of that is not visible to us because it'll be on the other side of the car. But if you put them side by side, certainly the launch pick of the 2023 car is night and day different. Then they've had this upgrade in Monaco, which was sort of a concept change, which now seems to be an intermediate step to where they really wanted to go with. And in order to actually address all the issues, they needed a fully new chassis. So this is sort of the first opportunity to fully address all the issues that they didn't address because they stayed with the concept last year.
Yeah, I think we've all latched on to, and rightly so, that like the side pod design is, that was what differentiated Mercedes from Ferrari, from Red Bull at the start of this era. And while the bodywork changed last year, as Phil says, with the Monaco package, Mercedes were limited by that crash structure. So when they had the zero pods, that sort of strut that sort of projected out of the side of the cockpit, that was for crash structure. But now they can sort of encase that with the proper side pods. But because the cockpit was, you know, crash tested and homologated, it was fundamentally in a state of compromise. So if you can do the Mercedes ground era in a snapshot, it's this. They simulated that the car would generate most downforce with that zero side pod when it was slammed into the ground. Worked great on a rolling road and in wind tunnels where it's controlled conditions, but lumps and bumps, it was really unstable. So for last year, they raised the car much higher, but found an aerodynamic ceiling had been hit. They couldn't extract as much performance as they wanted. So they put it in the middle, effectively, in layman's terms. But instead of that, putting it in like a Goldilocks sweet spot, it meant everything was sort of compromised. Nothing was running on the track as it had been configured to run from like the sketches, but obviously they don't do that in Formula One. So now is their chance to actually ground up, design a car. They know how it's going to work and sort of, yeah, design it in a configuration it will run, so it's not like sort of flitting between two extremes.
Yeah, I mean, you nodded a while ago to the incarnation of old, and it reminded me when I saw that car out on track of, I used to have a pet dog that had a chest infection, and she always looked really, really uncomfortable, like kind of hunched over and looked like she was, you know, not enjoying life. And I think that could be said about Mercedes just a short while ago. But let's move away from my old dog, shall we, and back onto the launch itself, because unlike Sauber and a few of the others, this is very much a no-frills, no-fanfare type affair. Now, Mercedes aren't really known for their huge fanfare and their launches. This was just Toto, Lewis and George answering some questions. So does this hint to their focus for the year ahead? Just wanted to kind of portray this very professional, streamlined entity.
Yeah, it's just like I said before, it's really about humility, I think, and knowing that this, you know, you're not in the right place to be very brazen or very, you know, flashy about what they're doing. They just need to get the basics right and make a good car, and then everything else will come from that. If you look at, I guess, two teams that have done the most flashy launch, it's probably RB, whatever you want to call them, that had the launch in Vegas, because they're obviously new team, new identity, new sponsors. So they needed to present themselves. Sauber as well, they needed to present their new identity. Whereas Mercedes, they're just sticking to that goes, they don't need to sell themselves, they just need to build a car. That's what they need to do.
Was it the... I was just trying to do a bit of discreet Googling in the background, but was it the W13 that they launched, and they had all the young drivers as well? And I think one of them was Andrea Kimi Antonelli, who's definitely not there this year because he's sort of, you know, moved into prime contention to replace Hamilton. So I'm sure he was busy testing the F2 car rather than just being sort of kept under lock and key in Brackley, so there can be no sort of... none of us speculating as to what he was or what not doing there. But yeah, it was a low-key fair. And like, I guess maybe as journalists, we're inclined to latch onto language. And I was put in mind, and this is a bad analogy, but of like Frank Lampard doing his, you know, the Frank Lampard meme, which just goes, yeah, 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 no, but seriously. And it felt a bit like that with what they're talking about. You know, we are positive about the gains we've made, dialing out the unpredictable handling, but we know Red Bull is so far ahead. But we won't know until the first session in Bahrain. Sort of every now and again, felt like when they're trying to get away from themselves, just checking expectations, both for them and for the drivers, and I suppose for the watching world as well.
I mean, even though he wasn't there, it still got you to go onto a well-known search engine and have a little look, Matt. So you're a little monkey, you're teasing. There you go. Now, Toto was there, and he answered some questions, and he's been with the team now for over a decade. The last 2 years haven't quite gone to plan. And he said, I'm just going to quote this, that almost every component is being changed. But he also said about the expectations being low or not really forcing expectations on. What do you both think about his comments and where that leaves Mercedes in 2024?
Well, I think Mercedes are in a tricky spot because they clearly got it wrong twice in a row. And that's really piled on the pressure on both Mercedes and on Toto personally. So clearly they need to get it right. They need to improve. But at the same time, there is the factor of Red Bull. And it's going to be unlikely for any team, Mercedes or any other team, to beat them before the new rules in 2026. So what is success for Mercedes this year and the year ahead? They've not really pronounced any specific results because it's too early. You haven't seen the cars on track. You don't know where you stand. But it's tricky because I don't think anybody's really expecting Mercedes to start winning races straight off the bat and challenge Red Bull. I don't think that's going to happen. So where does that leave Toto and Mercedes? What is success this year? They've lost Lewis, or they're about to. So they need to sort of find that spark again to build winning cars. So it'll be interesting to see how they, not only how they perform, but how they sort of position themselves they used to win everything, now they're not. So what is success now for them? And it's going to be interesting to see how that translates over the next 2 years.
Yeah, I think you've got sort of two things that keep coming to mind for me is that James Allison said last year that, you know, we might try and put a bit of spin on it, but the reality is from the first laps, you know whether it's a good car or not. Not necessarily that your colleagues can go out and spend their championship winning bonuses, but you know whether it's got potential or not. So you've got that if the car, even if it's sort of a... because the renders they've sent out, they've already said it's an earlier iteration. So what we see in Bahrain will be a different car again. But, you know, what's the baseline? How much can they build on that? And also, as Phil and I are learning from speaking to the team bosses and technical directors from the launches, that 2024 and next and 2025 are almost combined because the focus is on... because we've got a period of rule stability at the minute, and then the focus is on the new powertrain, new chassis concept for 2026. Resources very early on will be diverted to that cost cap. You know, finances will be directed towards that early on, aerodynamic testing restrictions. So basically, if Mercedes are lost in the wilderness again for 2024, you can almost take from that they're not going to be like a regular race winning force in next season as well. And that goes for the entire grid. If we do want a fight with Red Bull and a much more entertaining season than last, then we need to see some positive signs or a Red Bull dropping of the ball quite early on.
You just mentioned James Allison there, Matt, and I think we should probably just nod to him very quickly. I think this is the first iteration of a car that's purely done under his watch. What do you think the pressure is like on James Allison to prove himself this year ahead of 2025 and obviously beyond?
He's a very intimidating person to speak to, so I don't know if he feels pressure. Certainly, I feel more pressure speaking to him, trying not to say a daft comment and exposing my absolute lack of understanding of how to design an F1 car. But I suppose there is a pressure in the sense that while Mercedes has, you know, been so proud of its no blame culture, so yeah, you have James Allison and Mike Elliott swapping roles. It was chief technical officer and technical director swapping, James Allen becoming more hands on. And although it was said it was a mutual job swap and Mercedes is proud of its no blame culture, it did very much feel to the outside world like Mike Elliott was getting the blame for the ground effects rot. He then leaves the organisation altogether. Again, that could be for personal reasons, doesn't like travelling, sees life outside of F1, but still, they haven't escaped the narrative that looks like one person is taking responsibility and going. So from that, I think there is a natural pressure on James Allison because he's now like the token talisman, whether he wants to be or not. He designed, or he was leading the design team hands-on when Mercedes were in their title-winning pomp. He's gone away, they've sunken, now he's back. And so the expectation is for him to deliver, or people will look at him and go, okay, Hamilton's going, but he signed a long-term contract, he's come back. You know, that's the glimmer of hope to sort of, for Mercedes fans, for Formula One fans who just want a multi-team battle. That's what they're looking to. So again, I don't think James Allison, I might be wrong, I you know, not been for lunch out with the guy, but he certainly doesn't strike me as a guy that sort of wilts under pressure easily. I find him incredibly intimidating, but perhaps there is that underlying pressure on Mercedes as a whole, is they've restructured, whether bringing Allison back in and him signing a new long-term contract was a way of convincing Hamilton or whoever to stay for longer. That obviously hasn't worked out on that side. So does that indicate that the changes they've made, the data they've seen, is not enough for Hamilton to stay? And we know, obviously, sorry to get into like the T's and C's of all, but we know he was offered a 1+1 contract and that didn't make him feel very special, so he's got his own motives to leave. But has he seen the data and think, I'll at least be no better off at Ferrari? Or has he seen the data and think, actually Mercedes haven't fixed their problems at all and I'm not getting a great simulator run, so Fred Vasseur, yes please.
We'll come to Lewis Hamilton in just a few moments, because I just want to find out whether Phil is equally as intimidated by James Allison as you are, Matt. Can you hold a conversation without sweating profusely, Phil?
I've not spoken to him one-on-one yet, so we'll have to find out this season if I'm passing the Allison test.
Well, good luck, because he sounds like he might be terrifying, if that's what Matt is saying.
He's a nice man, but he just, if you expose your lack of understanding, and he'll go for that, but I don't think that's from a point of maliciousness. I think he's an engineer, and media duties can be quite tedious, so why not make it fun for himself?
Yeah, technical directors are known for not taking fools gladly, so you have to like show some sort of, you know, pretends that you understand what's going on. Otherwise, they'll struggle to give you the explanation that you want to hear. I'm not saying Matt is a fool, by the way. I'm saying all of the...
That is a correct assessment, Phil.
All of the press corps is obviously not as technically studied as they are. Otherwise, we wouldn't be in the press corps. We'd be there.
Well, I think what I'm going to take from that is it's a good job I never get to speak to James Allison, because I would be massively exposed. Now let's move on to Lewis Hamilton then, because we all know he's moving on next season or for next season. But his language was interesting during these interviews, because he's used the words like we and our and us. So he's still using the words that sound like he's still, you know, fighting for the cause, and I'm sure he will be because it's Lewis Hamilton. But what does he have to do in 2024, this season, to make his final hurrah for the team a success and lead him to victory? And is it even possible that he can lead them to victory?
Well, I think Lewis is too proud and too professional not to do anything else but just commit fully and give it his all until he, you know, closes the door behind him at Brackley at the end of the year. I don't think he will do anything different. It's clearly the end of the 2021 season is still lingering on his mind, and the last two seasons have only made him more desperate, I think, to return to the front. So I don't think we'll see anything different from Lewis. He'll just do his thing. He'll keep working and try and get the car to his liking. I think if Mercedes do succeed in addressing some of the issues that he's had with the car, including the cockpit position, including the rear ends being unpredictable, then I think we'll see the best Lewis Hamilton again. There's no real doubts about that. The other question is, you know, will he get the best of Mercedes all the year because he's leaving? That's the main talking point, isn't it? Because now clearly George Russell is going to be the future of that team officially. He'll be driving the development of next year's car way more, while Lewis will be gradually, we assume, frozen out, not of this year's car, but out of next year's projects that he won't be involved in. So will that change the dynamic in the team? Inevitably it will. We just have to wait and see to what extent and how soon that's going to start.
Yeah, I think Phil's hit the nail on the head there. I haven't read the press release from last year, but I did sort of note that in the announcement of this car, it's George Russell who's quoted first of the two drivers. So, you know, it's Mercedes putting him as a new leader. But it will come down to that, won't it? Is who gets a new front wing in FP1 sessions, and whether there's like an obvious trend that, let's say, in the opening eight races, Lewis Hamilton is winning that teammate qualifying battle. And then as he is slowly sort of made less privy to what's going on behind the scenes developments, does stuff move in George Russell's favour and the form changes? But in terms of Lewis Hamilton, I think none of us really expect him to be running away with like any kind of title battle. I think Verstappen remains a hot favourite for that. So it's that teammate battle, so that he leaves Mercedes with no question marks over like whether he's operating at the peak of his powers. And that means when he's then going head-to-head with Leclerc to jump forward a few bits, there's no one going, well, is Leclerc going up against the best of Hamilton if he wins or loses that teammate battle? So that's all that Hamilton can do. But, you know, he said before the launch that what great shape he's in, how physical his training's been. And I still think, you know, okay, we've seen a couple of incidents. So the two that spring to mind are him versus Alonso at Spa in 2022 on the first lap, him versus Russell into the first corner at Qatar, where the judgment's been a bit uncharacteristic. You go, that's not Lewis Hamilton. You know, what's gone on there? That sort of failing to judge where the other car is. So I think he just, not that he's got anything to prove in his success record, but I think he just needs to just underline that he's still absolutely at the peak of his powers. Ferrari are getting the best of him, and that what Mercedes achieved this season is the best that they can achieve.
Yeah, and that big, big moment in Baku where he left the magic on, and arguably that cost him the championship, because if he hadn't have done that, he'd have gained some points and we wouldn't be in the situation. We probably wouldn't even have Lewis Hamilton in Formula One anymore.
Yeah, it's a sliding doors moment, isn't it? We know how much sort of righting the wrong of 2021 is for him. And although, you know, it can be tedious when it's brought up in media sessions and years down the line, it does still, I'm convinced it all comes back to that. And Toto Wolff doesn't shy away from that either. He does refer back to that. And then every now and again, you think F1's moved beyond it. then Red Bull break the cost cap, then Massa starts suing the championship. So you think, look at other events where, you know, the rules haven't been applied and whether the results will change. So F1 does need to move on from that. But I still think it's a massive thing for Hamilton. And, you know, I've not been in that position where I've lost a, you know, even an egg and spoon race on the line due to some horrible technicality, so I can't imagine what that's like.
I want to know how many egg and spoon races you've taken part in now, man.
We've got no eggs left after Pancake Day.
Nicely done.
I think this could be a whole different podcast, Matt. There's some legs in it.
Egg and spoon race leg chat. Let's move to the other driver that you mentioned a few moments ago, and that is George Russell. Now, you mentioned that the team may be positioning him as this number one driver. I think they certainly will be looking for 2025. Clearly, he's going to be the one that has the big Lewis Hamilton shoes to fill. You know, there's a fair bit of pressure on George Russell this season to outperform Lewis, and then, of course, next year to have that number one mantle on his shoulders. What's he been saying at today's launch?
Well, he looked like a 12-year-old that was taken to Disneyland, really. He looked extremely excited. He said he couldn't sleep last night. Yeah, it's interesting. It's a massive opportunity for him, isn't it? He's going to be, by default, the longest-serving Mercedes driver next year. And depending on who they can bring in, he's probably going to be still the lead driver. He's got a massive opportunity now to really get the team around him even more than he already has done. He's clearly Mercedes's junior protege. So he's known the team, he's known Toto for such a long time now that this is really his team, much like McLaren is Lando's team and Ferrari is Leclerc's team at the moment. So it's up to him to, first of all, just perform. He's had a really up and down 2023, and he'll be the first to tell you, he tell us on several occasions that it wasn't good enough last year, he wasn't consistent enough, and it's, yeah, he needs a better car as well, obviously, but he's got a big year ahead. And I don't know that he needs to convince anybody that he's the lead driver. I think he already has that support and that faith that he can be. But it depends on who they're bringing in. If there's somebody like Kimi Antonelli coming in, then clearly he will be the lead driver, because Antonelli will be an 18-year-old rookie. But if they can somehow prior lose an established top driver from another team, then he will have to prove himself again. So it really depends. But right now, he has the advantage of knowing the team very well, and he needs to use it.
It could make for a really interesting dynamic, in the sense that you've got Lewis Hamilton leaving, George Russell wanting to establish himself as a clear number one, and then what that does for the inter-team relationship. Do you have Russell wanting to sort of soak up every last bit of knowledge and experience Lewis Hamilton has before he goes? Do you want Russell absolutely doing his utmost to wipe the floor with Hamilton to prove he's on top? And if so, what does that do for the relationships inside the team with sort of both sides of the garages? Will they be, you know, basically galvanizing around the future lead driver, and that makes it more harmonious in future seasons? Or will there be sort of a bit more tension than we've seen? Because, you know, since the start of their relationship, we had Russell coming in as a young pretender, Hamilton, who, you know, publicly didn't really want him there. He was quite happy to continue with Valtteri Bottas until the wind behind Russell was blowing too strongly. So, you know, and so far it seems pretty cordial. Even you go back to Qatar, once Hamilton had reviewed the onboard footage, he was like, yeah, entirely my fault, I'll hold my hands up to that. So just, will there be a bit more grit between them this year? Because basically it doesn't matter if it's no love lost, because Hamilton, maybe he'll come back as a brand ambassador, but he's not going to be driving Mercedes Formula One car in Grand Prix anymore. So who cares if he goes while he's angry? If that's Russell's mentality, like, if, you know, it's my last season to go up against statistically the best driver, so whether he's in his title winning pomp or not, let's get one over on him and show that this is my team before it becomes my team.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a very, very feisty season, as you say, and why not George putting it to Lewis a few times to prove that he's got what it takes. Now, let's just remind ourselves, the last few years for Mercedes have been pretty poor by their own standards, the heavy porpoising, the lack of wins as well, compared to previous seasons. What do we think then? Do we think that Mercedes can start to challenge this season for that top step? What are your overriding thoughts, gents?
I think there's a little chance of anybody challenging Red Bull. I hate to say, because I like everybody else, I'd like to have a much more interesting, a much more close fight for the win. We'll have to wait and see until Bahrain is maybe the boring answer, but I think it could be very close right behind Red Bull with Ferrari, with McLaren. I don't know if Aston will be in the mix necessarily, but it's possible. And it goes back to what we said before, what success for Mercedes. I think they desperately need a couple of wins. Hamilton hasn't won in a few years. He'll be desperate to go out with a win and close his Mercedes stint off. He doesn't want to have a third season without a win. It's, you know, it's not something he will be used to. So they will probably be content with second, but close the gap to Red Bull substantially and get way more wins than they have done in the past couple of years. And I think it's possible, but it will just depend how close people can get to Red Bull.
Yeah, absolutely. Mercedes scored fewer than half the points of Red Bull last year, so the natural expectation is to close that gap. But then what will we get from Sergio Perez? Either he's better and Red Bull score more points, or he's as bad and he gets the boot, Daniel Ricciardo comes in, is closer, Red Bull score more points. So Mercedes need to close that gap. And I know we've spoken a lot in this episode / podcast about, you know, the areas Mercedes are looking to improve. But Ferrari have identified key areas anyway. And I know, you know, it's ridiculous to read into this, but like, if you compare their feedback from their shakedown last year to the Ferrari shakedown this year, they already seem more positive, that the car seems a bit more settled. So again, if they can improve, if McLaren come on stream, as Phil said, we could have this mega battle for second. And if there's, you know, basically a sheet of paper that covers the three of them, Mercedes could be a closer to second to Red Bull, or potentially fourth. So they really sort of need to assert their place at the front of that queue. And maybe the new car concept helps with that, because if they have a solid foundation, then it's a revised sort of, you know, they're treading new grounds, or they'll have some strong upgrades, hopefully, to bring on, to put on that car to be more competitive. But yeah, they have to win races. You know, 2022 was a dreadful year and still more successful than last year in terms of the sort of the trophy hunting. So that's where they need to get to. And I think, yeah, a late season Hamilton win would be a really nice sort of footnote to that.
Yeah, it'd be a nice final farewell for him. Before we say farewell on this chat, I'm going to ask you a question. I've asked pretty much everybody on these launch videos and podcasts we've been doing. This Mercedes, the W15, is it a hit or a miss, Matt?
I'll say hit, just because the expectations or the benchmark from the last 2 years are such massive misses, that surely there's only one way to go, right?
Bit of a Ron Burgundy moment just there, Matt. What about you, Phil?
It has to be a hit. There's no other option, really. So they've had two misses in a year, so you can't have a third. So it has to be.
Well, time will tell. Thank you very much there to Matt and to Phil. We've got Red Bull's launch tomorrow to round out the launch season. And next week, we've got F1's Bahrain testing on Wednesday the 21st. So make sure you stick around and follow us for all of that. Thanks for listening to the Autosport Podcast. We'll catch you on the next one.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.